Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of our podcast series. We've got an interesting topic that we're going to be looking at today, establishing and confusing your personal brand. So details about that in a moment, but let's just say the reason that we're doing this is that we believe that we've got something to say that professional women and men might like to hear, but also be challenged about and perhaps want to respond and then express a view about too. So what are we going to do? Well, we always start with a process with my esteemed colleague here, Kelly.
Hello. Welcome, Kelly.
And we always start with a recipe because we start with food and drink because that's our favourite pastime. And today we're starting with actually tea, specific types of tea. And I've introduced Kelly to French Earl Grey, which she's not had before.
No, it's very nice.
And I'm going to just absolutely astound you with my knowledge about tea whilst you drink it. And
I have bought you a couple of T2 tea bags over the years.
Well, that is true because you know that I like tea.
And you're a hard person to buy for, but I walk into those shops and I feel like a kid in a candy store.
That's wonderful, isn't it? And the smells and the different types of tea. But just a few astounding facts for you. Mm-hmm. Did you know that tea is the most widely consumed beverage after water on the entire planet?
Wow.
Exactly. And that it was originally ever grown in China. But now there are 41 countries that produce tea, and that's growing. So it is actually expanding. And interestingly, the Chinese started it properly, but the older a tea is, so in other words, aged tea, is the ultimate, right? Okay. So you age it, and the older it is, if you serve it to a guest, that means that the guest is highly honoured. So if I was giving you aged tea, really aged tea, I would be honouring you as a very special person.
Okay.
So there is this way of serving tea. And the older the tea, apparently it increases the energy that will be bestowed upon you from drinking it. Mm. I believe it's called Cha Kai. I'm not sure of pronunciation, but that's how I believe it's pronounced. And that will increase your bodily energy.
Okay.
So the aged teas increase your bodily energy. Mm. So there you go.
Do you find that teas over time, I used to enjoy the very hard tannin dark teas. Yeah. I just find them just too heavy now. I like green teas and peppermint teas and fruity teas.
It is interesting. It's a bit like wine.
Yeah.
Your palate changes. Yeah. But I think with tea as well, because so many times, and I hate to say it, but you go to some places and people just don't know how to make tea.
Yeah.
And you're actually put off by the taste of it. So that can also change what you drink because it's ruined.
Wasn't it a shock to go to your place that time when you actually had a tea plunger?
Yeah.
And we had to wait and let our tea. It felt like a coffee ceremony.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of teas now, and there's a lot of very special plungers that you can get for different types of teas.
Okay.
And you should really have a timer, and you should absolutely do it according to the, like chai tea, for example, should never be touched under 3 minutes of steaming.
Wow.
3 minutes is the bare minimum. You can go longer, but that's the bare minimum.
Wow.
But people, of course, don't. We're all in a hurry. We rush. And we assume a tea, you just pot it in, you can squash it and serve it. But in actual fact, you're changing the taste of that tea by the way you do it.
But I think you're also sort of using that 3 minutes of time. You know, when we work with our coaching clients, sometimes even having a cup of tea does resemble 3 minutes for you to be able to reflect, for you to be able to maybe get your energy in the right space. So merely having a simple cup of tea from a coaching point of view can actually have a lot of benefits in the workplace.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, people should remember that when they're dealing with having a discussion with someone about anything or even to for a team meeting, letting all the members of the team enjoy that period of tea drinking, and then they'll communicate more, perhaps in a more relaxed manner. So it's, that's our tea story today.
Thank you. But speaking of workplaces and teams, I had a very interesting conversation with a team member or someone that as a client I've been working with, and I get the feeling I was speaking really quite authentically. I was speaking about my whole self in a workplace, and my feedback was very clearly that I am a person with a brand, and by speaking about my whole self, I was confusing my brand. I've never heard of brand confusion before, because I guess I'm someone, and the people that we coach, you have to be your whole self, you have to be really authentic, and look, having pigeonholes and compartments where you feel as though you're many different, you know, I often feel a little bit bipolar or multiple personalities. So I think it's just what sees what you get. But can I ask you, in my 40s, I have children, so I identify with myself as a brand as being a mum. Mm-hmm. And all the bits and bobs that are entailed with that. I'm also someone who, with you, runs a micro business. So I have business skills and I have business development and I win work with you in coaching and mentoring individuals and teams and pulling their performance up a notch. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a health and safety consultant. I work in health and safety, have for many years. I speak on health and safety matters. I talk wellbeing. I'm on boards because of my experience with that. So how on earth could I possibly have thought that I was confusing my brand?
Well, I think you've already summed it up by the number of things, the number of personas that you are representing. So you just think in that conversation just then, you went through at least four, if not five, personas of you.
Mm.
Your personal brand is the statement of the one very strong element that you want to present to others.
Right.
And that there is a uniqueness to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have to decide amongst all that, what is the one thing that's threaded throughout those performances, and I call them performances because in each of those things you are a performer.
Yep.
That is across them, so that is unique to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that becomes your personal brand. There is a difference as well. As I use the word persona, there's persona and there's brand.
Got it.
The persona is how you present and behave in a particular role. So my role at the moment is in a management placement, so I'm a very senior executive for a company. So my persona is matching the executive status of the position.
Mm.
My personal brand, however, the uniqueness that I want to bring and that I can bring to anyone else is my connect to people, my ability to connect to people. So my personal brand will be around that, the ability to connect. My strength is people. My strength is that capacity to create a relationship very quickly. But my persona at the moment is executive. My persona for another role that I'm doing is much more relaxed. So, you know, you have to decide that the personal brand is the one unique element that you're bringing to life and to connect with a customer or a colleague. And the best value that you give that to that person or customer. So in simple terms, you pinpoint your unique value proposition.
Nice.
And then that's your brand.
So can you have more than one UVP?
Yes, you could, but you need to make sure that it is still unique, that the recipient can clearly see that element and will see the value in connecting with that element.
Mm.
So you just, you can, but to be honest, you tend to need to focus on the one main unique value proposition that you hold.
Okay.
And focus on that initially and then see, you may be massaging it slightly for a particular relationship, but still it remains the main theme that you're selling.
Okay, so when you're coaching people, the thing that I actually sort of heard in that conversation, and I must say was probably from someone who did enjoy having a compartmentalized brand.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine this person probably would have children and probably would be just like me having activities, and I won't tell you which gender, but I have one for you to pick. And I'm sure that there was actually someone who at work was very focused around what needed to happen in the workplace. And I imagine that probably there was social, you know, and I do get the feeling that I was brand confusing because I was trying to mesh the three.
Yeah.
So I guess the call out is, look, you can actually have lots of different personas.
Yes.
But you need to have just one anchor that hooks.
Absolutely. And you must be very clear on that, what that unique anchor is. But more importantly, what is the value of it?
Yeah.
So what is the value to me connecting with you in a particular situation? So your unique value proposition is going to give me something.
Yeah.
So you've got to make sure that you do place and be able to express the value that your uniqueness and your unique statement and brand can give to me. Again, really important that you focus on that strength, if you like, and that value. But you do place a value on it for the person who's going to receive.
And does it always have to be? I was thinking about our friend Donald Trump. And I was going to talk about this a little bit later in the podcast, but I have been watching and listening to Donald Trump, as we both have in the last few months. He seems as though he's someone who isn't spot on with his brand. He seems to me who's someone who either has a really good brand and marketing machine and they're able to tell lies, mm-hmm. or he's someone who, you know, just lives this life mm-hmm. from a branding point of view and is just happy with the paradox. What if your brand of success, of entrepreneurialism, the podcast that I was listening to also about success and entrepreneurialism was a podcast called The Dollop. Mm-hmm. They're two American comedians who, it's a funny podcast, and I encourage anybody who's listening, it's a bit rah-rah. It's very American. So the first 15 minutes, you feel like they're just talking about their sponsors and it's brought to you by a terrible American accent. But if you get through all that crap,
yeah.
they actually start their podcast by saying, this is you and I, a story.
Yes.
And the story is told by one person who asks really good questions, and the other American comedian has got to try and pick which brand, which company, which person they're talking about. So I just finished listening to the Dollop podcast at the same time that I was thinking about Donald Trump's brand, about Uber.
Mm.
So I couldn't believe actually how bad the sole director of Uber had a career trajectory toward ultimate success and entrepreneurialism with Uber. He's been bankrupt, like Trump. Mm. He's been at risk of sexual assault claims. Mm. You sort of see the pattern? Mm. So how do you manage that when you've actually got to market something that's just not true? How do you live with yourself?
Well, the element is, Kelly, they don't have to. Mm. I mean, they're working within both a manufactured brand and their own private brand, and they can live in the world and succeed because of that manufactured brand. I mean, Donald Trump simply sells his experience in business, you know, in that apprentice, was it? Where he used to sack people, you know, you're fired.
Mm.
He loved that,
yeah,
right? Because that perpetuated the view that he can run the business and he alone can make a decision.
Mm.
So what does that reflect? The President of the United States. Yeah. What does the President of the United States do? Makes decisions and he can fire you because he's the most powerful man in the world. So you see, his manufactured persona is what has continued, and it's got him where he is today, unfortunately, for the rest of the world. But if you actually looked and asked him, and if you read about him, there's not a great deal that's really good that's written about him, but if you examine him, I'm sure his personal brand would be around that piece of believing in yourself, that you can do it, a bit like the Nike thing, do it. I reckon that's where he comes from. But That's his anchor. But his manufactured brand is exactly what has, it's got him to where he is now. But also, he has been a very successful businessman. And, the Trump empire is massive.
Yeah.
It's worth millions. So he's got to have been doing something right in that arena.
Yeah.
But I think his anchor is very different to that manufactured brand.
So put you on the spot. Do you have an anchor?
I think.
Right here, right now.
I think I do. And I think it's my, and I hate using the word because it's been overused, resilience. But I think my ability to actually just remain me, no matter what's happening to me. I like everyone else, I'll keel over in the privacy of my own bedroom.
Yep.
I will, kick the filing cabinet in the office with the door shut.
Yep.
But there will be no difference from anybody's perspective on how I behave or how I am. So I think, my anchor is my capacity to be me all the time. Yeah.
This tea is getting sweeter and sweeter.
It's
changing.
That's a good tea. You see, you should. It's exactly like wine. Yeah. Wine gets better the more you drink. Yeah. The first taste, you're just exciting your palate. The middle of the wine, you get the smell as well.
Yeah.
By the end of it, all your senses are thinking, this is a lovely drink. Tea works exactly the same way.
I find by the second bottle of wine, though, it tends to sort of be a downward slide.
Well, the second bottle of wine, unconscious, as I have been with you when you've been under the influence.
Oh, I think I'm funny then.
You're the only person who thinks you're funny. But tea doesn't seem to, the good thing about tea is it doesn't do that to you. The effect remains. You don't suffer with the hangover of the day.
Yeah.
You just drink the tea. Although drinking too much tea, it is a diuretic.
Yes.
So you will find the bathroom and you need to know where it is and need to know regularly if you drink too much tea.
If I take you back, though, to brand, someone who, I don't know, you've been reading about, I got given the book Thrive by Arianna Huffington years ago. And I didn't like it. No, not years ago, sorry. Probably a year
well,
ago.
Well, yes, been but out for a while.
I circled back and read it on your recommendation. Why do you love her and her brain so much?
Well, I'd sort of changed my view of her. I admire her. I admire her business capacity and what she's done in her life, in her professional life. I don't like the way she writes sometimes, though, because it's almost, I always feel like she's treating us like we're, you know, basically female idiots.
Yeah.
But with Thrive, once you get through some of that, you know, emotional waffling, there are huge messages in that book that people really need to take account of, because we're all busy. We all have very, you know, important roles in work. We have important roles outside work, and we confuse the two, and we put our energies totally into one over the other, as she did. I mean, she had marriage failed.
Yeah.
She has two daughters, one of whom is anorexic. You know, that, exactly, there's been drug issues. Look, the whole thing, she's because, and I mean, you know, you can't say it's all about her, but she wasn't there. She was in her career, and she admits that. Mm. She was, you know, 14, 15-hour days.
She does own it.
Exactly. So I think that's a good thing. But I think when you read that, the three messages that I liked about her is that she talks about our drive for money, and it's a bit like a
three power.
Yeah, oh, exactly. With the, you know, that we're, it's all about money and power, and it shouldn't be. We should actually have one element in our support for ourselves, which is about well-being. She calls it well-being again, which I think is now being a very overused term. But she talks about it as being inner wisdom and calmness and intuition.
Yeah.
And I think, again, when you think about it, that's been around for a long time. But, you know, it's a great message. And I think, look, it's one of those books you can easily read. I think anyone will get something out of it. Any career man or woman who is seeing that their life is actually not as it should be because of the, you know, the choices between work and things. And the only other thing I will mention is that she very much sells meditation all the way through the books, meditation. Look.
And you sleep. Know,
yeah, oh, the importance of sleep. I mean, I read that interestingly because I don't sleep. I have a huge sleep problem. I never get enough sleep. And I, you know, I think that was really good. But the idea of meditation, I think the good thing is she explains it and shows it. It doesn't have to be the, you know, the Hare Krishna, let's all meditate. You can do it for 10 minutes at a desk. Yeah. She describes how to do it. And I thought that was great. Yeah. I think people should try it.
Yeah. And 3 minutes over a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And the thing I like about Ariana is, I think the reason why I didn't like her book at first was she is someone who is just so open about owning her corporate mistakes, her personal mistakes, and the mistakes that she says were now based upon fatigue. Like she's basically. So I just like the fact that she owns it. I like the fact that she looks authentic.
Yeah.
I like the fact that she's warts and all. The thing that I don't like about branding, and it's one of those things that I want to anchor back to the Ubers and the Donald Trumps of the world, is when you get pigeonholed in a brand. I hate being pigeonholed in a brand. I like coaching people to try and empower them to always confuse. And I think you've told me that a few times, you know, just aim to confuse, aim to ignite, aim to create change for two reasons. One, you keep everybody else on your toes, but two, it keeps you happy.
Yeah.
I was, you know, what I was reading this week, you're going to laugh. I live in the Hills District of Sydney, New South Wales, and I've grown up in the area. It was very working class, as you know. It's become aspirational now, which is a complete crack up. But I don't belong to any of those mummy networks. It's never really worked for me. But there was an article in the paper, in our this very big glossy living magazine, about the brand of being a Hills District mum. And there are 12 signs that you're a Hills District mum. And look, I don't want to disregard the woman who wrote it. She's probably, from her point of view, well and truly enmeshed in that brand. It's when it doesn't suit you. You don't like that one broad brush to everybody. I think everybody's got a UVP, and everybody should be allowed to actually sort of confuse, ignite, make themselves as a success without having to anchor back to how everybody perceives you. So some of the lovely signs that I should be demonstrating is that I have a huge network of people on Facebook that I often wonder how their trips were when I don't know them. I think Facebook is a very personal thing, but there must be this conception that if you live in this district, you have a huge Facebook network and you're putting some of those things that Mia Friedman talks about in her book, Work Strife Balance, you know, hashtag best life, hashtag happy family.
Oh, yes.
You know, that sort of dripping saccharine sort of that everything's about the image.
Yeah.
The other part of the things in these Hills District, Mum, is you're very much into small wine bars and hipster cafes because that's the trend in the district.
Except, can I just interrupt and say, and where are they? You know, like
they're there. And the other one is you're a health guru. You know, you all need to have gym memberships at a big shopping centre, but never ever go. And you need to have, this is what I like, a date night. Once a week, go on a date night and be pampered by your hubby. And you also need to actually have your babies with you or your children with you. Capitals, all, ..
Yes, good, fine.
I like you, think that women need to surround themselves with women, but they need to work.
Yes. Well, they need to see, the issue with that is that it absolutely wipes away a value proposition for an individual.
Yeah.
You know, you're pigeonholing them and you're also describing a situation that, is not adding value to anything. Now, obviously, I'm assuming it was written tongue-in-cheek.
I don't think so.
Well, I'm assuming it's written tongue-in-cheek because, you know, that would make me feel better about it. But I think it is sad, though, that people have this need to pigeonhole people, to take away their inherent value as an individual. Yeah. Whether they're at-home mum, working mum, whatever they are, doesn't matter. Yeah. Everyone needs to know and understand and appreciate their own value proposition. Yeah. And to stick with it because it's them and it's what they should be happy with and be proud of. So
unfortunately, I think those feel-good stories put whatever movement you're trying to back by many years. So what have you been watching? The one thing that I've been watching, and I suppose particularly talking about brand, is I do want to promote, I am chairing a Women in Safety and Health Forum. We have a steering committee of very senior safety executives and we are launching stretch targets across our industry to be very much focused around mentoring and thought leadership around gender inequity, you know, in the Australian health and safety space. So I'm very passionate about that. But I know you've been watching Victoria.
Yes. Look, you know, it's
which is very brand. It's won awards for those people have.
But I watched it because, well, I knew we mentioned brand before, but how can you not get a better brand than the royal family?
And Victoria
Times. Connected to it. I mean, she went from being a hormonal teenager to being, you know, one of the best queens they had in the blink of an eye. Mm. But it was all about brand. Mm. And I think they're a classic. I mean, they're better than any of the presidential representatives because it is a total brand for them. It's the persona.
Yes.
It's the brand. It's the connections. It's the behaviours. Everything is about being royal, the rules, the regulations. Yeah. And, look, I think it's a great series, very well acted.
Yeah.
I never did English history, so I learnt some of the connects that I didn't know about. But it is good to watch. But watch it very much thinking about the role of women, the role of brand, you know, how you present your brand, and the people who will always try to tear down your unique value proposition. They're all people that are in our workplaces. It can be just one of your colleagues. It can be your boss. You know, it can be someone who is always undermining you.
Yeah.
They're trying to take away your unique value proposition. Yep. And guess what? They can't because it's unique to you.
Yeah.
So I think, with the royal family, that's what they do. They hang on to it and it doesn't matter what happens, they never change.
Do you think the modern royals are doing a better job?
I think they're doing the same job. Absolutely. They still have the same brand and you watch them, you watch their behaviours. But all they've done is create a connect with the customer, if you like, which is all us little royal people. Subjects, to be able to see and identify with them. So we identify, you know, Kate with her children. We identify her as a mother, not just a princess.
Yeah.
We identify Harry, who's the redhead, you know, flamboyant. But guess what? We now recognise him as a nice bloke who's gone away. He went to the war, he fought, and now he's supporting returned soldiers. So all they've done is make a connect that normal people like us, poor people, can see and feel. So absolutely perfect at branding.
Good job. Yeah. Well, in the last podcast, I think we awkwardly closed with something like game, set, match.
Yes.
So we won't close awkwardly. See you later, guys.
Bye.